coming to you from various places around the world. This is the Global Exhibitor Podcast, the podcast designed to help exhibitors succeed internationally.
It's funny, it changes throughout Germany as well. In the middle of Germany and towards the north, say Hamburg area, there's what you call an Hanseatische Mentalität, or a mentality of that part of the world, which is almost very British. They're very open. And when they like you, they'll tell you they'll like you and they'll do business with you. It's really quite nice. It's really pleasant, especially for Germany.
Your host for the Global Exhibitor Podcast is Jeff Hanna, a designer, entrepreneur, business strategist, industry thought leader, and student of world cultures based in the United States. Here's your host, Jeff Hanna.
Well, hello, everyone. We're broadcasting today from Dayton, Ohio. We have a visitor here from Germany to the headquarter offices of Exhibit Concepts. It's an honor to have this guest with us today. Steve Tustain is a personal friend. He's a colleague and a consummate professional in the international arena for exhibitions. He and I used to work together at a company called Gielsen Interiors and Exhibitions. For those Dutch of you listening out there, that's Gielsen Interiors and Exhibitions, based in Eindhoven, the Netherlands. Steve was based in Germany, where he still lives now, but Steve is originally from Great Britain, where he studied architecture, and as an adult, he moved to Germany, where he's now lived for more than 20 years. He has broad global experience and works across multiple industries for many recognized brands, and Steve now works for MDL Expo International GmbH, based near Frankfurt, Germany. I greatly appreciate Steve coming to share with our team here at Exhibit Concepts and for his willingness to appear as our special guest today. This is part two of a two-part interview with Steve Tustain, which I hope you enjoy on the Global Exhibitor Podcast. Steve, would you say there's a greater distinction between someone's personal or private life and their work life or professional life in Germany versus some other countries in the world?
Yeah, I suppose there is a difference. In Germany, the culture is not to really be on a private friend level with the people you work with or for. The UK is totally different in that people will go out for drinks and to the pub after work and... In Germany, once you finish work on an evening, you tend to be finished. I think that, especially in the larger corporations, they don't like to mix business and private life too much. On the other hand, for the last 5 years where I work now, it's been quite good fun, actually. They're quite a fun outfit, and we do grill occasionally, and sometimes I go out with the owner of the company and we'll have a beer together and have a chat on an evening and just talk about other things, or... Recently, we started going for a swim early in the morning together and before work. But it's not something that you see very often in Germany. They tend to be quite strict in separating their private and business life. I can't really comment on the US, although I still have some very good friends from previous companies that I've worked with that we've become quite good private friends. I couldn't say if that's a part of the culture here or not, although we went out for dinner, didn't we? So that's...
I guess we're private friends.
Yeah, exactly. So... I do like that, and I think it's the openness in the US to talking to people and to be very much on first name and first family terms, that you get to know the family, you get to know background to them, and then you can place them and you can get to feel that there is a trust there. Where Germany, that level of trust can be quite hard to achieve. It can sometimes take several years before people who you work with actually trust you, which is... I suppose it's just a conservative nature of the German psyche. That's how they are.
What are some of the things that had to happen being from outside the German culture originally in order for you to be perceived in the right way that you wanted to be perceived and to be fully accepted as a professional by your German colleagues?
I think it's because you come from another country that you have a different sense of humour, you have a different way of communicating, you have a slight dialect, which I always still have when I'm speaking German. It's, I suppose, my trademark. The way to approach any German in a business relationship is you have to build up trust and you have to show them that you're very competent at what you're doing. And you have to go that extra mile sometimes and basically work your backside off to prove to them that you are what you are and that you can do what you say you can do. And it has meant that over the last 4 years, sometimes I have worked a 72-hour shift to make sure that my clients get a happy result out of it when things have not gone quite as they should have done as planned. And then the people that you work for see that you do that and see that you're bringing in new ideas, new business, new thoughts and new processes into a company that start to work. But I suppose that's something you get in other cultures as well. I mean, maybe because the Brits are a little bit more flippant, a little bit more easy to communicate with, it doesn't mean to say that it's any easier to prove yourself in a company or in a business situation. It's just maybe the German way of doing things is they wait a little bit longer. It's funny, it changes throughout Germany as well. In the middle of Germany and towards the north, say Hamburg area, there's what you call an Hanseatische Mentalität, or a mentality of that part of the world, which is almost very British. They're very open. And when they like you, they'll tell you that they like you and they'll do business with you. It's really quite nice. It's really pleasant, especially for Germany. And if you're down in the south towards Stuttgart or into Bavaria, they'll hold back for a long time before they'll talk to you. And because the Germans have got this first name and old way of doing things, so that they'll call you Mr. or Mrs. for years until they'll start calling you by your first name. When you're on first name terms in Germany, my goodness me, you've made it, sort of thing, especially with the people in the south. Although if you're an American coming in and you don't speak any German, then obviously they'll speak to you in first name terms because that's intercultural. But if you speak their language, then they'll call me Mr. Tustain for years. And if you're dealing with, especially with big industrial clients, it's very, very rare that you'll be able to call them on first name terms. Very rare. Because they don't like to take that risk. So that's what I mean. The Germans hold back a long time before they give you that trust, although it might look like you have it on the surface. You really haven't got it. The worst part of Germany for that, my opinion, is Bayern. The Bavarian side down towards Munich, it can be a nightmare down there. Doing business in Bayern is so difficult because they just work with people who are Bayerish. So from that area, they don't like to work with anybody from outside. So basically, I gave up going to Munich about 10 years ago to try and do any business with anybody down there. If there's anybody who listens to this who's from Bayern, I'm really sorry. It's not a part of the world that I'm really... it's beautiful. The people are really nice, but business, it's a nightmare. So
let's talk about that a little bit further. Like Bayern, is it Bayern?
Bayern. It's Bavaria.
So, yeah. Okay, is that the... just a different way of saying Bavaria?
Bayern is a Bayern, I think, is that the German way of saying it? Yeah, it probably is the German way of saying it. Sometimes I have difficulty separating that off.
But it basically means the same thing as Bavaria.
Yes, yeah, it's the right southern part of Germany down towards bordering on the Alps and into Italy, so right down in the south.
As I've understood it, of course, there's a big rivalry sort of between, like, let's say, Dusseldorf and I think it's Cologne. There's not even a sign pointing to Cologne from Dusseldorf.
Oh, there is, but it's basically, it's just a fun thing that they have. I mean, it's not, I don't know where you can compare it to in the US, but it's just football teams and this sort of thing. That's all it really is. It's just a historical thing. I mean, I think there probably was some sort of war or something or other in the past. The Germans are quite good at that. But anyway, I suppose if you compare it in the UK, it's like Lancashire and Yorkshire. The old War of the Roses in England still has some fruit to pay these days, especially when my wife's from Yorkshire and we talk about people who come from Lancashire. It's always quite funny, but it's not meant seriously. But in actually being quite serious, there is... a big mentality difference in Germany between the old eastern part when it all opened up and the western part of Germany. And that's something that's going to take generations to change. And it's not just a mental issue in terms of how they think and how they are. It's obviously a financial issue as well. The people don't earn as much out of that part of the world. It's sort of the poor part of Germany still, although it's growing. It'll all grow together. And I think it was a good thing that Germany reunified. And as an architect, it brought me a lot of work at the time before I started getting involved in the exhibition side, because it all had to be rebuilt, but it is still there. And funnily, somebody was asking me about this the other day. I don't know why it came up, about the political situation in Germany and the neo-Nazis and all the stuff that goes on over there. And it's funny, you know, the Germans are very, very aware of that and very sensitive to it, and would jump on anything that happens because they just are so hurt by their own history, in a sense. The Germans will never say that they're proud of Germany, never. It just doesn't come into their vocabulary, because they're afraid of the fact, by saying that they're proud of the country, that they're proud of the past and what happened in Germany in over the years. And somebody asked me about it, and I said, do you know what, I think there are probably, although it's in the news, there are probably more neo-Nazis down in Bayern than there are in, it sounds like I've really got a downer on Bayern, this I haven't, but it sounds like there are more neo-Nazis in Bayern than there are in East Germany, but it's sort of hidden away by the politics and the police, and it's sort of kept quiet and hidden away. But I suppose compared to, just to clear that one up, compared to the rest of Europe, I think that there are more extremists on the right side of politics in other countries than there are in Germany. It's a very peaceful, quiet country, and I've never come across any issues like that. And even as a foreigner, I've never had anything but pleasant memories in the country. So.
I tend to think that many Americans, especially if they haven't traveled a lot in Europe, have a mindset or think that Germany is a relatively uniform culture throughout because of the size of the country. But in reality, there are still a lot of subcultures and groups and areas that are quite distinct from one another. And I've always heard that Bavaria, for those people in the south anyway, in the Bavaria area, that they're Bavarians first and German second. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. Yeah. That fits perfectly. It's like in England, people from Yorkshire would say this is God's country. Yeah, in other words, this is a separate country to what the Queen's talking about in some respect. Yeah, it is like that.
What kind of cultural advice would you give to our exhibit managers, event planners, as they're doing projects in Europe and in Germany?
I think you've got to inform yourself before you go to these countries. The British and the Americans have always got on very well, so I don't think we've ever had any issues. There are different cultures. I'm always very aware, and I think that's a piece of advice that on a personal level, be very aware of your surroundings and slowly feed your way into a meeting, into a situation, and watch how people react to what you say and adapt to suit. Because you cannot be, again, on a personal level, if you're doing business, I can't talk for corporations. I don't really want to go into that. That's too complicated for me. But on a person-to-person basis, be yourself. You can't hide who you are, and if you're an American person who's gregarious and outgoing and you're going into America, you can't just turn yourself into completely 100% serious business guy. It's not going to happen. But as long as you show respect to the culture where you are when you're in a foreign country, I think that's always the most important thing. We just had some time in the deepest, darkest part of Africa with my family, and it's the same, not just in business, but in privately, when you're in these cultures, you just have to be very careful initially and look at what other people are doing and how people talk and how they talk to each other and how they communicate, and then slightly adapt. Because these days, I think with the global business market, people are much more forgiving to people coming from other cultures into their own and doing business. I don't think it's quite as, you can't make the faux pas mistakes anymore. I think with the Germans specifically, when you're in meetings, how do you put this? Keep the crap factor low. sure, you're going to have a little bit of small talk at the beginning of the meeting. Where do you come from in the US? What are you doing there? People don't tend to go straight, what's your job title, what's your function, which they do in America quite a bit. Tends to be a bit less than that. And once you'll notice the signal in that meeting when that part of it's done, and then you get down to business. You just talk straight. You just keep it logical. You keep it simple. Don't embellish. Try and be as straight as you possibly can. But I think that goes for these days for a lot of cultures. And if you're going to do business long term, be honest, be straight up, as much as anybody can be in business these days, and come across genuinely. And I think then, if there are cultural differences, if you come across genuinely, that will break down all the barriers that there are in that respect. From me, on a personal note, I've always tried to do that in Germany, and it's led the fact that I've been there for so long and that I've enjoyed it and loved it. And sometimes the Germans have a mentality of loving to stab you in the back and to kick you around a little bit. But if you sometimes just turn the other cheek a little bit and take it as part of their mentality and get them back later.
We talked earlier about the Brexit issue, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are in terms of the impact you think this will have on Europe in general, on Germany, and in particular, our industry.
That's a bit of a minefield, isn't it? For me personally, it means that I'll have a dual citizenship because I'm going to have to. Although after being 25 years in Germany, I think it's only respectful for me to have a German passport as well as a British passport, or even just a German passport, to be honest. But for the industry, I suppose in some respects, for us as a German-based company, it could actually be quite positive, although I feel sorry for the UK companies. Because I mean, I'm sort of starting to hear of UK agencies trying to set up new offices in Germany to avoid all of the red tape that was going to come into place with the increased barriers between the UK and the rest of Europe. I think it's a shame. I mean, my wife cried when Brexit happened because she couldn't believe that the UK is so, to be honest, stupid to pull out of something that's been really very good for the last 50 years, I suppose. I'm really not sure. I'm not sure if the people are talking about a hard Brexit, a soft Brexit. The thing is, the British mentality is that they'll try and negotiate something, or they'll think they're going to negotiate something that's going to be fair for them. But I noticed something that was this is a very important cultural difference, actually. Boris Johnson had a meeting quite a while back now with Angela Merkel, and she basically said in the meeting to some of his points, no. Now, the British mentality is that when somebody says no in situations like that, that means maybe. What they don't realise is when Merkel says no, the German mentality means, you know what, no. And that means no. It doesn't mean maybe, it means heck no. So all these negotiations that are going on at the minute, they're also fighting French culture, German culture, British culture, and what. I have got no idea what's really going to come out of this, if a Brexit at all. It was sold to the British with so many lies and so many politicians profiting out of it, and it was the right. It was the start of populism in the European political scene, and I just hope it. It seems to have been with the elections in Holland and France and others that it's not gathering speed, and it. Thank goodness, we've got a stable Europe, and that stability will take us through the worst part and maybe the best part of Brexit. Maybe there are some positive aspects that come out of it for UK companies, but for our business. It's going to be harder for us to build in the UK. But to be honest, the UK market is so small. Well, that's not going to impact us anyway. The impact of it is for companies who are working in the UK, say for production companies, for agencies that are working here, and that they're going to have serious issues, especially if they're trying to manufacture and send to Europe. So that's why I said earlier, for us as internationally based, with me speaking my English and German, maybe a little French if somebody pushes me. I think based in Frankfurt, it's going to be good for us geographically. We're pretty much in the centre. And I think Brexit, for a lot of my clients, which obviously I do deal with a lot of UK clients, mainly the creative agencies, I think it could be quite a big advantage for us. It'll cut out the British side of it, unfortunately, the British side of the production side of the business. I think we'll suffer more than anything else. But we'll see. Who knows what's going to happen with Brexit? This life is full of surprises. Who knows?
So, Steve, how did you get into the exhibit industry?
It's actually quite a funny one, this. As always in life, you working as an architect, I figured out after quite a few years that I was just bored, stupid, sat in front of a screen, working on drawings and designs that were going to take years to build. And I just saw a job ad for an exhibition company. I had no idea what it was about, no idea what the business was about. And I can remember sat talking to the owner of the company, and she asked me what I was looking for. And I said I want a job with some stress, and I want to get to travel and round and see the world. And I think it took her about 30 seconds and she gave me the job. How many people turn up at a job interview and say they want stress? That must have been crazy. It worked. And I got involved then almost immediately with running some big accounts for IBM and Porsche, and started to love it. And I got to travel around, and my first trip to the US then came into the picture to come to New York and to see a company we were working with then at the time. With the sales manager, I was project manager, and loving it because of my architectural background and building engineering background. It was fairly easy to get into, and I mean, it was the old drawing board time when I started, and no CAD stuff or anything like that. It was all straight onto the drawing board, and I loved it. And it meant my wife didn't see me too much. But at least she had some time with the remote control to herself, maybe. And it went on from there. And I actually got out of the industry. Well, not really out, but I did that for 4 years for project management side. And then I got asked to go and run the event department at a large temporary structure company, one of the largest in the world. They do all the Formula One and Grand Prix and that sort of stuff. And I went and did that for 4 months, and they liked me quite a bit, so they made me CEO of the company because I threatened to leave them because the CEO at the time was not particularly very good. And so a friend of mine became the marketing part of the management, and then we had a financial controller, and we did that for 4 or 5 years. And then I wanted to get back into the exhibition side, which I missed, which I did, and carried on doing that. I've been doing that since. One of my professors years ago said that I'm too big to be a designer, way too tall, way too broad to sit and design. You need to be out on site managing projects and telling people what to do. So it was, I sort of got more into that than just project managing, and then eventually into the sales side. But it's been one hell of a trip. I don't regret any of it. It's been fantastic.
Well, thank you so much, Steve, for joining us on the podcast and giving us such a great look inside the German mindset, plus much more. If you want to reach out and connect with Steve, you can find him on LinkedIn or visit the MDL corporate website at mdl-expo.com. This has been part two of a two-part interview with Steve Dustain. If you haven't yet listened to part one, please check that one out as well. A lot of great information there. The Global Exhibitor Podcast is now in its second season, and we have had many fantastic guests who've shared so much great content, and I truly hope you all are getting as much out of this as I am. It's been a great learning experience, and if you are, please tell others about it and share it on social media. We really appreciate the exposure, and we've gotten a lot of good feedback, so thank you for your faithfulness, and our audience is growing on a global basis every week.
We like to remind people that all business is conducted within the context of culture. So each episode provides insights to help marketers understand the cultures they're trying to reach and strategies for building bridges across cultural divides. If you like the Global Exhibitor Podcast, please share it with others, subscribe to it, and rate it on iTunes. We greatly appreciate the feedback. Please also check out our website and blog at www.globalexhibitor.com. And finally, if you or someone you know would make an interesting guest on this podcast, please let us know by sending an email to guest@globalexhibitor.com. And until next time, thank you for listening.